You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
It's a lot of O-Dog when it's unfiltered.
Yes, I would like to hear unfiltered. Yeah. I think he is unfiltered, actually, at the best of times.
I think that's what's made him such a good broadcaster, actually. So they're out of the Hockey Hall of Fame. They'll be back tomorrow, but... you know, we've had a great show in terms of guests. We just talked to the Griffins, Shaquem, talking about his journey to the NFL. We also have a Maple Leafs game coming up tomorrow, and it'll actually kind of look like an NHL game, Steve, because yesterday did not look like an NHL game.
No, it looked like the Orlando Solar Bears against the Orlando Solar Bears, or in fairness.
Which is now the Newfoundland Growlers, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Which you asked Mike Babcock about.
Well, no, what happened in the press conference afterwards, during the game, a bunch of us got emails from fans complaining about the rosters that were on the ice and that...
They paid for tickets?
Well, what happens with exhibition games is the season ticket holders don't have to buy every exhibition game. I think they're told which ones they have to buy. And last night was one of the ones that they were told they had to buy. And so people paid good money to watch garbage hockey. And so Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star asked Mike the question after the game about the lineup. And I'm not sure Mike really understood the nuance of the question and what he was asking him. So he gave his answer. And then I came in to sort of explain more about the question. And the question was... If you know last night's game is when your season ticket holders buy, mm-hmm. and say the game on Saturday night previously was not, then why would you play a good lineup on Saturday night and a crappy lineup for your season ticket holders? And basically Mike says, I don't give up whatever about those. There's other people that have to think about that. I'm trying to put my team on the ice.
Right.
And in fairness, it wasn't a question really for the coach. But he had to answer it under the circumstances. It was a question for Kyle Dubas or for Brendan Shanahan.
And that's tricky because, you know, you are planning this preseason schedule out months in advance, and when your season ticket holder has to buy those tickets, and then, you know, Mike Babcock is coordinating with other coaches when we're going to play our A team or when we're going to split and everything. Well, I get it.
If you're going to look at it realistically, big picture, what Kyle Dubas or Shanahan has to do before the preseason even begins... They say, you know what, here's the game people are paying for, people paying real money for, and it's our season ticket holders. Let's make sure we have a real lineup that night. Everything else, all bets are off. You do the rest. And I think that would make sense to me. But they give Mike complete control, as they should, mm-hmm. for the most part. And he did what he thought was right. And the one thing that came out of last night, I will say this, is, boy, it was easy to start cutting. I mean, if you wanted to. Yeah, I don't think they did anybody today. But
the former coach, Steve Simmons, is coming out.
You don't have to be able to coach. You're going to watch like 10 minutes of this. Gone, gone, gone. Like red pencil right through guys' names.
So tomorrow night in Montreal, it looks like we're going to see what could very well be the opening night roster, which will be also against Montreal, but will be in Toronto. And just in reading some of your columns, because one of the big questions you often have during the preseason is who's the big preseason star? Who's the guy who broke out in the preseason? And for a team like this, it's tough to break out just because there's so many incumbents, right? Would Rasmus Sandin be the guy who has maybe, whether it's your opinion or others, kind of impress people the most? He's probably not going to make the team this year. Most likely not going to make the team this year.
I would say certainly he's not.
Certainly not going to make the team this year. But he may be a lot closer than people thought a month ago.
Well, I didn't know a lot about him other than he was their first draft pick, and I hadn't seen him play really in the Ontario Hockey League. But watching him in camp, I'm very impressed with him as a person and as a player. And I'm impressed with how he seems to play to the level of whomever he's playing with or against, and he clearly has very high levels of skill. And, you know, sometimes you get a kid and you put him in camp, and he's deathly afraid to make a mistake. He doesn't want to do the wrong thing. He's frozen up. They're nervous the first time through. He doesn't seem to have any of that. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to try stuff. I'm going to try the things I do in junior. Some of it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And you can see he's trying. He's getting into the rush. He's doing things. I would say of the young players, the younger ones, and I'll include Timothy Liljegren in that group, of the younger players that won't be on this team, he's the one that interests me the most going forward.
Really?
And I look at him. I think you could not completely make a case for him making this team. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's a year or so away. And sometimes a guy just steps in and is comfortable at a level. And you don't know who's going to be that way, you know, how it's going to translate. He's got guts, and he's got smarts, and he sees the ice very well, and he moves the puck. He's very much the modern defenseman that teams are looking for today, who will rush the puck, who will throw the long pass up the ice, who's not afraid to jump in, who's not afraid, very comfortable running a power play. And to me, he's been one of the revelations of a Leaf camp where, what are we talking about? Who's going to be the backup goalie?
Right.
Who's going to be the sixth and seventh defenseman? And eight, if they keep eight. Is Nylander going to sign? These are all sort of, you know, can Tyler Ennis possibly play on that, on the line with Auston Matthews? These are the questions you're asking. None of them are projecting a Marley to move into a significant place on this roster. If they move in, they're going to move into, you know, sort of odd places.
Right, because many of us don't consider Kasper Kapanen or Andreas Janssen Marlies right
now. They've played already, right. And even then, it looks as though they're going to start the season on the fourth line.
Yeah.
Unless they move Kapanen up to play with Matthews on the right wing.
Which is a big question, and our hockey insider Bob McKenzie will join us at 6:20 to get, not that there is much of one, an update on William Nylander. And, you know, for Nylander's camp, the best thing that could possibly happen is they struggle offensively, and more specifically, the Matthews line struggles where his absence is felt. That obviously has not happened yet in the preseason. The leverage to me, Steve, seems like it always is. With the team.
There's a term. It's called restricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
The key word is restricted. It basically means you have no leverage. But in this case, I'm not so certain that there's reason for William Nylander to have leverage. He's played two full seasons in the NHL. He has at times performed very well. He has at times performed okay. He has scored two goals in 13 playoff games playing with the Leafs' number one center. So there are things you look at and say, oh, this is really good. And there are things you look at and say, we don't know yet who he is. And so what a good general manager will do, and I suspect Kyle Dubas will be that, but we've seen David Poile and other people do it over the years, is you'll determine this is what we value this piece of work to be worth, and this is what we value you going forward to be worth, and therefore we'll make the offer. Now understand this, there's a template sitting somewhere in Kyle's office or Lawrence Gilman's office or Brandon Pridham's office that has Auston Matthews' salary 2 years from now.
Of course.
And Marner's salary 2 years from now. And Tavares' salary. And this is their budget. So you can't stray unless you absolutely jump off your island. I don't think the Leafs are going to jump off any island. I think they know exactly what they want to pay them. Whether it's a short-term or long-term deal, they are willing, from my understanding, to go either short or long. But they know exactly the term and what it will be and in terms of dollars. And I don't think they're, at least from what I've understood, that they've moved an inch. And I don't think they're going to move an inch. The
right.
movement has
and,
to come.
And they haven't needed to move
no,
an inch.
You have to get them signed eventually. But the movement
has to... But
they're
not under the kind of pressure that a lot of other teams might be when it comes to a star like
no,
that.
No, because he's not a star yet. If he's going to be, he might be a
star.
Well,
and when we were talking...
Is 60 points a star?
No.
I don't think it is.
But for a guy like him, he's
an above average NHL player.
And he's
player.
On the verge... potentially of stardom. But that's, you know, we talked about that with Rick Vive, that guys are getting paid now for their potential.
You have to do that. David Poile might be the best contract signer in the NHL. He gets the guy just before he's about to become what right. Nylander is. And he long-terms him at a price that, you know, over time, Roman Josi gets underpaid yeah. and Ekholm gets underpaid and all the guys, Ryan Ellis will be underpaid and all those guys that they sign long, Philip Forsberg and Arvidsson, they've done a great job controlling.
That's how you survive in this market.
Yeah,
right?
and that's how you survive, period. Not knowing, again, what the cap's going to be a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the road. And I think that Dubas, he's got two cap guys with him. He has two experienced contract CBA writer cap guys. That's Lawrence Gilman and Brandon Pridham are two of the most established contract figure people in the business.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to mess. They're not going to say, oh, we're going to jump off because you've missed a game. I don't think they're going to move at all. And if you look at it, the comparable, to me is Nick Ehlers.
Yeah.
And it's so simple. It's $6 million long-term. If you want to go long-term, that's the number. It's not what Pasternak is getting. It's not the $8 million they're asking for. You know, I think they're nuts to be asking for that, but, you know, they have their reasons, obviously. But you look, has he done what David Pasternak has done? No.
No.
Not even close. David Pasternak dominated the Leafs in that playoff series last year.
No, and that already is a great contract. That is in the ballpark of the Mark Scheifele contract. Yeah. Like,
well, he's 6'8", I think, a year.
I think that's for his production value.
Well, if you sign a guy at the right time, that's what happens. But here, there are factors. There is an agent, Louis Gross. Louis Gross has a history of asking for the moon. That's what he does. He did it with Johnny Gaudreau in Calgary. He did it with Torrey Krug in Boston. He asks for the moon, and then he waits and waits. And he hopes that you eventually come closer to the moon. Most times it doesn't happen, or in some cases. So Gaudreau signed right at before the season was to start, and I believe Torrey Krug signed in Boston just before the season was going to start. And if he goes along with the history, then I suspect Nylander will sign in the sixes just before the season, unless it's a bridge contract. Then the numbers drop a little.
And the other thing is, you bring in Tavares, and all of a sudden you don't need Nylander to maybe one day be a center, which might have been their bargaining chip that, hey, you know, this guy's eventually going to be one of your centermen, which obviously comes at a different value, different dollar amount. He's a winger on the Maple Leafs, yeah. And that's not changing.
And you know what? If you're a winger and you're putting up 75 points a year, and that's
you're still going to get paid.
Oh, you're going to get paid nicely, and you're going to have a wonderful paycheck. Right now, he's looking for money beyond what he's accomplished, saying, this is what I'm going to be worth. And they're saying, well, we haven't seen that yet, so we don't know. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know. Do you know what he's going to be? I don't know. And I look at times, I think his talent level is extraordinary. But talent level and production don't always meet. And he, you know, what we saw, I'll use Mitch Marner as an example. Up until halfway through last year, it was like, oh, boy, what's happening here? This guy's fallen off the map. Mm-hmm. And then from game 40-ish on through the playoffs, he looks like a star.
A year ago, the conversation really was heated towards Nylander versus Marner and who can affect the game more. And a lot of that was because Nylander had such a great series against Washington. I feel like it's totally flipped. And those are just two young players having different second half of the year / postseason runs. You know, Mitch Marner was a much better player. And we saw that sort of dynamic ability to take a game and kind of have it on his stick.
Let's go back to game 7. Boston versus the Leafs. It's
a lot of people that don't want to, okay. But okay.
I think it's 4-all when DeBrusk scores.
Okay.
You know
yeah.
the goal I'm talking about?
Yeah.
If you look at the play and you slow it down and you back it up and you go back into the Leaf zone, the guy who sort of stopped skating on the play is Willie Nylander. Mm-hmm. And if Willie Nylander does what he's supposed to do on that play, there's no goal. And so you have to look at, did he score? Yes. Or didn't he score? Yes. Or when did he score? And how did he score? And who set it up? And what does he do when you need him with a minute to go? And what does he do when you're protecting a lead? And there's so many factors. The average great player, very good player in the NHL will play 18, 19 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. The best will play, the forwards will be in the low 20s. So if you're playing 18 or under Babcock, 18 minutes a game, and the puck's on your stick for a minute, then for 17 minutes, you have to know where you are. You have to be accountable. You have to be in the right place. You have to be in the right position. You have to be on the right side of the puck. All these things that fans, when you look at stats, don't take into account. But teams break down all that stuff. And
I can imagine Mike Babcock looking at that and seeing it.
Yeah, a guy like Babcock would be obsessed by that, mm-hmm. as most coaches are, because playing without the puck is more important than playing with it, because you play without the puck way more.
Right.
And so you have to be in position, either defensively or neutral zone or wherever it is you are on the ice. You have that to account for. And again, knowing how the Leafs will operate under Dubas, or having a sense of how they'll operate. And I think Lawrence Gilman and Brandon Pridham, his key assistant GMs, the two guys he's going to listen to and work with on contracts, those guys, that's their specialty. I mean, Pridham wrote some of the CBA.
Yeah, he knows it as well. He should know
And when Las Vegas, by the way, was putting their team together, Lawrence Gilman was doing some of the mock drafts from the other side, you know, for Vegas. These are guys who know their business.
Yeah.
And they know exactly what
they
want
to pay. Those are the guys that you need now.
And again, you know, Nick Ehlers, the comparable works for me. That's exactly who Nylander is.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is our hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. How are you, Bob?
Excellent. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're good. We're filling in for the boys. They're at the Hockey Hall of Fame for Upfront and Unfiltered, which Unfiltered is intriguing.
When Gilles Lupien took over from Serge Chavard on the Montreal Canadiens defense, he said he had big shoes to fill. He said he had big shoes to wear. That's how we feel today.
Okay.
It was a good line at the time.
There you go.
So, Bob, we were talking about William Nylander, and I was racking my brain. How do I get creative? How do I not just ask you for an update? And I the well's empty. How often are they at least talking, the Leafs and
Nylander? Well, we really don't know anything. Both sides are basically information lockdown. I suspect that there's dialogue going on, especially as we get closer and closer. They'll be looking to find some way to bridge what was believed to be a pretty significant philosophical gap going into the discussions. So I won't sit here and try to tell you that they're X number of dollars away and that they used to be this and now they're this, other than to say when they went into the exercise, the Leafs were very firm that, you know, that Nick Ehlers at $6 million a year in a long-term deal, or David Pasternak at $6.7 million, that's the universe in which I believe the Leafs would be operating. And I think in William Nylander's representatives probably went in saying, well, we shouldn't necessarily preclude Leon Draisaitl's contract from being a comparable, and he makes $8.5 million. So, and again, there's a danger in mentioning those because those may not be current numbers, so we'll see where it goes. I ventured last night on That's Hockey that my recollection of other situations where it becomes difficult to determine a long-term valuation on a player like William Nylander, that quite often the solution is to do a bridge deal, but I don't think either side wants to do a two-year deal. So, you know, you look at recent history of some pretty elite offensive players who have been in a very similar situation to what William Nylander is facing. Not identical by any stretch, but very similar. And two that come to mind were Ryan Johansson and Nikita Kucherov. And in each of those instances, rather than do a long-term deal, giving up years of free agency and locking them up with their teams, Johansson did a three-year deal at $4 million a year. I believe originally that was with Columbus, and he was subsequently traded, obviously, to the Nashville Predators. And Nikita Kucherov, in fact, is right now on the third year of a three-year bridge deal that pays him $4.7 million. So in each case, Johansson got an eight-year deal worth $8 million a year from the Preds. And Kucherov, starting next year, of course, has an eight-year extension at $9.5 million. So both of these guys got what William Nylander was looking for, but in order to get into that $8 million plus, and in the case of Kucherov, $9 million plus, they had to go with a three-year deal where they bet on themselves and they take a number that is not going to be comparable to what some guys sign on long-term deals for $6-7 million a year. So then the universe becomes, you know, Johansson's $4 million on the floor and Kucherov's $4.7 million, and would Nylander's camp be interested in that? I just wondered out loud if that might be a way to try and that way he gets to go have another kick at the cat here in 2 or 3 years.
It should also be pointed out, Bob, that Kucherov fired his agent after they did that contract and has since switched agents when he did the big one this summer. And in his case, he bet on himself and was an MVP candidate in each of the last 2 years. As of right now, we still don't know what William Nylander is, and by that I mean as a player.
Well, I think what we know is that if he's in camp and playing and starting the season on Auston Matthews' right side, he's going to probably put up a considerable number of points and specifically some goals. So, you know, you're right. I mean, I'm not saying William Nylander is Nikita Kucherov because I'm not sure that he is. But by the same token, on this particular Toronto Maple Leaf team, there is a bounty of offensive riches for this core group that includes Tavares now and obviously Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander in terms of the four core guys up front.
But to quote someone in the Leaf organization who doesn't want to be quoted, he played 13 playoff games with the Maple Leafs' number one center and scored two goals.
Yep. You know, hey, listen, it's...
Which puts him back to the Nick Ehlers thing, right? Because that's, yeah, you know, that's the best comparable to me, because
right.
Ehlers struggled in the playoffs as well.
Right, but if you don't want to lock yourself up, then and again you don't have a lot of leverage, because we know restricted free agents don't. Then you devise a system whereby you're not locked up and you bet on yourself and you get a chance to come back. And, you know, because the fear, and I think others have mentioned this already, the fear is that maybe Nylander signs a deal for in the sixes, and within the next year, if not months, you know, Mitch Marner gets a deal for significantly more than that, $8-9 million a year, and that Austin Matthews gets a deal for even more than that at $10-12 million. And William Nylander looks at it and says, hey, of the three amigos here, I seem to be at the very low end of the food chain, and I'm kind of gotten lapped by these guys. And so the way you guard against that is to go a little shorter and give yourself the opportunity to go back to the table a couple of years or 3 years from now.
Joined by our hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. So obviously, William Nylander did not play last night, and in a game that kind of looked more like an AHL game than an NHL one. But one guy who did play was Kasperi Kapanen, who scores a goal, to my eye, looked better than his first preseason game. But then you listen to to Mike Babcock afterwards, and nobody looked good. I don't know if that's just he has a higher bar than I do, or he's focusing a little bit more on a guy like Kapanen being a better defensive player.
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of all of the above, and also the fact that right from the get-go, Babcock has made it abundantly clear, and the whole organization has, that you know, Johnsson and Kapanen are not going to be handed anything. That they might have gotten glowing reviews for a lot of what they did last year. But, you know, this is a new season. They are fourth line hockey players in the Toronto Maple Leaf scheme of things right now. And, you know, part of the culture that Mike Babcock and the Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to establish here is that the young guys earn everything that they get. It's why Austin Matthews doesn't have a letter. It's why the guys that do have letters are 39-year-old Patrick Marleau, a 9-year veteran of the National Hockey League in John Tavares, and Morgan Rielly, who's no longer a kid and has been around the block more than a few times with the Toronto Maple Leafs. None of the kids got letters, not Austin Matthews, not anybody else. And in this instance, as much as Johnsson and Kapanen did in short bursts last year, they want them to do it on a consistent basis for a much longer period of time, and they want to send a message that, you know, you're under the gun and you need to earn your way, and if you don't, we'll find somebody else who will. And that's, I think, philosophically, the way that Babcock's trying to run the organization right now.
We were talking a while back on the show about surprises in the Leaf camp, and I guess it's hard to have surprises when, you know, the battles are for like backup goaltender and third line wingers and sixth and seventh defensemen, and that's sort of the way things look outside of the Nylander situation. But the surprise that I've seen, and I'm curious to hear, because you would have known him before and you would have had him rated before, is Rasmus Sandin. And from the first day in Niagara Falls, watching the 3 days I was there, and through the exhibition games I've watched them, I've been really surprised by his hockey IQ, by his intellect, by his, you know, how he plays the game with no fear at all. How did you see him coming in, and what have you seen of him so far?
Yeah, I think you're right on all counts, to be honest with you, Steve. And he's playing. He and Liljegren, when they've been paired together, have really been quite good. And I know the guys on Overdrive last week were talking about how, you know, how rare it is for first-round picks of the Toronto Maple Leafs to come to camp and not get a ton of notice or, you know, extreme pressure and spotlight. And both Sandin and Liljegren have really been able to come in under the radar a little bit. And suddenly we're towards the end of camp here. And like yourself, everybody's kind of really impressed and kind of blown away by the composure and the smarts and the mobility and the ability to make the right play and the shot from the point of both these guys. But, you know, Sandin's just a young guy and I think it's a testament to the Leafs scouting that they got this guy late in the first round and that he looks very promising. And yet there's no rush. The Leafs have plenty of defensemen. They've got 8 guys right now for 6 spots. And you could actually make a case that it's actually 9, maybe even 10 guys for 6 spots. But Sandin and Liljegren don't have to be those guys. So they get to, ripen on the vine, so to speak, and whether Sandin does that with going back to Sweden or the American League or the Sault Ste. Marie, and most people think he's going back to Sweden, but that'll all be sorted out in the wash here. But it's a good way to develop guys that have a lot of potential, and both these guys do.
Joined by your hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. Bob, speaking of defensemen, today Shea Theodore signed a 7-year extension with Vegas worth $5.2 million. In the hours that have passed since that news broke, what sort of reaction are NHL people sort of saying to you about this deal and what it might mean to a guy like William Nylander?
Well, I don't think it has any impact whatsoever on Nylander. Different positions. And a little different profile too. I mean, if you really look at it in the cold hard light of day, Shea Theodore started last season in the American Hockey League. Shea Theodore, after he was recalled, I think was probably a healthy scratch for the Vegas Golden Knights on half a dozen occasions. And yet, over the course of the season and in the playoffs, Shea Theodore played extremely well, giving everyone reason to believe that he's for sure going to be a valuable top four defenseman in the National Hockey League. So when you look at the structure of the contract, there's no signing bonus, there's no protection for a lockout year and those sorts of things. It's just, you know, $5.2 million straight across the board. And at the fact that it's 7 years and they bought 2 years of his free agency, you could say that they had all the leverage and they used it to their advantage. But the flip side of that is that Shea Theodore, because he wasn't able to play regularly in Anaheim, because he wasn't even didn't start the season in Vegas last year, it's pretty remarkable that he's making $200,000 more than Morgan Rielly for the next number of years. Now, Morgan Rielly is going to get his chance sooner than Shea Theodore will, but nevertheless, it also gives you some idea that $5.2 million AAV is a testament to the fact that this guy is going to be a real good top four defenseman in the National Hockey League, and so it's kind of win-win for both sides. I'm sure Theodore would have liked to go shorter, bet on himself, and wanted to do that, but I think Vegas was pretty committed to getting a long-term deal that gave them some security. He's also got security. I mean, he just got close to almost $40 million in committed dollars, so he's set for the rest of his life. And when that contract is up, he's still going to be very much in the prime of his National Hockey League career.
Bob, the top 50 TSN lists that we do here annually about the top 50 players projected for the coming season came out today. And as I'm looking through the list, the one name that I was somewhat shocked not to see on there, maybe I live in the past just a little bit too much, is Carey Price. Were you surprised to see him not on the list? And if so, reason why?
Yeah, I'm surprised he dropped as far as he did. I mean, last year going into the season, he was number 5 on the list. And this year he's not even there, and he was in the early 50s, whatever it was. We talked about it a little bit last night. You know, people... We all are guilty, and I, the only reason I say I'm not guilty here is because I don't vote on that stuff, but it also probably doesn't give me as much right to criticize those who did. But having said all that, we're so transient in terms of our opinions. We run so hot and we run so cold. So, I mean, you can look through the list, and here's the other thing about these lists is you get X number of people that do it, and you end up going all over the map, and you end up with a consensus, and a consensus is great, but it's interesting to me just how it all shakes out. For example, you know, I think Matthew Barzal, if I remember looking at the list last night before it actually came out, I think he was number 34 or thereabouts. And that's great. You know, I think he's going to be a great player in the absence of John Tavares in Long Island. I think Barzal's going to do great things, and he's a rookie of the year, and he was dynamic, and he's fun to watch. So yeah, why not give him some love and put him at number 34 or whatever he ended up. Brock Besser,
on my list, by the way.
Yeah, Brock Besser, the guy who arguably would have won Rookie of the Year had he not been injured, quite conceivably, and was kind of in a position where for a while it looked like he was going to win it going away, you know, he didn't make the list. And so I always look at those and I try to rationalize those, but it's just the nature of the beast when you get 25, 35 people all making their own individual lists, some high, some low. By the time you tally up the points, one guy gets shut out on the outside and one, it's great. I would call it water cooler talk, but no one has a water cooler anymore, I don't think.
No, but if they did, they would be talking about today's news, which included Zach Smith being placed on waivers. And let's listen to how Matt Duchene reacted to today's news.
I'll be honest, it's a kick in the balls for us. That's how it feels. So, but again, it's things that we as players have to, you know, we can't control.
Bob, can we just come to the conclusion that that's frustration over not just Zach Smith, but the situation in Ottawa?
I guess so, but I think you got to be careful to read. I try to be careful reading stuff into that. Everybody in the world is down on the Ottawa Senators, and rightfully so for a lot of reasons. But obviously Matt Duchene wasn't happy that Zach Smith was put on waivers. The thing of it is that Zach Smith could be on waivers, and it doesn't bode well for his future in Ottawa, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's gone either. He's got another 3 years left on, or 2 or 3 years left on a deal that pays more than $3 million. Nobody's going to pick him up on waivers. Obviously, you know, they might be able to make a deal for him if they take back NHL salaries and or eat salary from their end. And maybe there's a bit of a financial or a lot of financial reason to do this. Or maybe they've just decided that in a rebuilding situation, we can get a younger, cheaper player to do the same thing Zach Smith did, which was score 5 or 6 goals last year. Now, and someone will brightly say, well, then why did they give him a 4-year deal at more than $3 million? And the reason was, well, he scored 26 and he was halfway through another season where he was on his way to some pretty good numbers. He ended up with 16 that year, but nevertheless, yeah, and in hindsight, and even at the time, for a player of that age and who plays more bottom half than top half, that was a lot of years and a lot of money to give that guy, and now it becomes a bit of an albatross in an organization where money's obviously important to the owner. So but in terms of back to Matt Duchene, only he knows for sure how much of that is basically a shout out for Zach Smith saying, hey, we like Zach Smith. We don't want him to go anywhere and we're not happy about it, versus this thing's a dumpster fire and we're going to complain about everything in that context all season long. So I don't presume to know exactly what Matt's thinking other than what he said. And as I said, Zach Smith could very well clear waivers tomorrow and continue to be in the Ottawa Senator lineup because the deal's not available to him and maybe is the next best option, better than a younger, cheaper guy. I don't know. We'll see how that one plays out.
Bob, awesome chatting with you. And as someone that is honored by the Hockey Hall of Fame, I hope the boys don't mess it up too much for you tonight.
Well, you never know. You dress those guys up a little bit. But
good stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bob. Bob McKenzie joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Hurry in to Maple Toyota during the Toyota 2018 Clearout event where you can get rates from 0%. Visit MapleToyota.com.
You know, when you hear a player say something against their team in hockey, and you don't hear it very often, you often wonder what is the context of what he's saying. What's really behind it? So is Matt Duchene upset that Smith was waived? Is this his best friend on the team? Is his wife, assuming he has a wife, and the two wives friend? You don't know what the relationship is when you hear a guy speak in that circumstance.
I think it's human nature for a player where he is in his career, given that he wanted out of the out of Denver because of the issues that they had as a team, which now doesn't look like a great, you know, call. But, you know, this is a team that's going in a direction where they need to, it's a reset, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. And they do have young talent there, but they just gave up one of the great assets in the game in Erik Karlsson. This is a team that is certainly not going to compete right now. And Matt Duchene is a player that wants to compete right now.
In the first hour of the show tonight, we interviewed Barry Trotz, Stanley Cup winning coach from the Washington Capitals. And I would think under normal circumstances, it would be awfully hard to go from winning the cup and all that goes with it to now I'm coaching the New York Islanders and John Tavares is gone. And yet they're selling this between Lou Lamoriello and Trotz as we've got players here. We're going to do some business. We're going to be hard to play against. We're starting in day one. You know, how you sell your team internally and externally, it really matters. It matters to the players. It matters to the fans. It matters how you position yourself. And if in Ottawa, the fans don't believe in what you're doing with the ownership, and the fans aren't sure they trust the general manager after the Karlsson trade, and you're looking around, and the players are wondering what's going on, and the coach isn't clearly putting out the way the team is going to be rebuilt, then you're going to get the kind of thing you heard from Matt Duchene. And I suspect you won't get anything like that from the New York Islanders because they're being real clear about how they're going to proceed.
And just look at the style of the management there
But you set the tone.
Yeah.
And here's Barry Trotz again, who he won the cup for the franchise that couldn't win the cup. And the franchise thought so little of him that they lowballed him on purpose because they wanted him to leave. So Brian McClellan, the GM, wanted him to leave.
Before they won.
Yeah.
Afterwards, they kind of had to do it.
Well, they continued on that. He wanted Todd Reardon coaching. That was pretty clear to anyone who was around that team. And so he made it. But there can be lingering effects of that from both sides. It can be lingering inside the Washington side. There can be lingering for the guy leaving. It's how you sell it. It's how you make people believe it. It's what you say. Sport, at its essence, the beginning of every season, in every city, it's different in every city. It's about selling hope.
And talk about the contrast between Ottawa and Toronto right now.
Yeah, I mean, here, the hope, I mean, it's sky high is the hope. The hope is how far. Well, this team, by the way, has never won a round in the playoffs. Let's see how far they can go.
It's not if, it's when will they win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and there's reason to think that.
Coming up, my best bets. We'll wrap up the show on what has been a historic show, because it's me and you, buddy. It's the first time that Mark Rowe and Steve Simmons have ever hosted Overdrive together.
Yes.
Mark, that's down. Not good, eh?
Thanks, Phil.
You'll probably never hear it again. Yeah. Although, you know what? I was wondering coming in, what are we going to do? And then, you know.
Then three hours happened.
The Seattle guys?
Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah.
You know, Van Pelt from ESPN and his relationship with Tiger? What a story. I know the guys who are normally here are terrific, and I don't want to miss a show. This was a pretty good show to be part.
Time now for today's best bets, brought to you by ProLine. I'm going with three baseball games. Let's start with the Brewers and Cards, an important one when it comes to the wild card. Milwaukee's three games up on St. Louis. Take the Brewers, that's the visitor. Cubs and Pirates. The Cubs offense is struggling. I think they're going to bounce back against Chris Archer, and the Pirates take the visitors in that one. And the A's and Mariners, Oakland clinching the division yesterday, the team with the lowest payroll to begin the year. I think this is a hangover game, figuratively and literally, so I'm going to take the home plus. If you throw $20 on that and I get all three predictions right, you score over $126. You can find my picks on Twitter, at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and match stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. Two more home games for John Gibbons in Toronto as manager.
11 seasons. The first time, if you add the two stints managing the Blue Jays, that's 11 seasons. Not as many as Cito Gaston managed. About 100 fewer wins, I think, is the number that it comes to over the course. But John Gibbons has been an important figure in this town. And he's done, to my money, for all of the grief he's taken over the years and all of the sort of guff, I think this might have been, as a manager, his best season.
This 2018, this season, really?
Yep. He doesn't have Stroman, basically, for the year. He doesn't have Sanchez for the year. He doesn't have a good year from Estrada. So those are your top three, other than Jay Happ, who they traded, starting pitcher, and they traded your best pitcher. Your closer is Roberto Osuna. He's gone. Your shortstop is supposed to be Tulowitzki. He doesn't play a game. Mm-hmm. Your third baseman is supposed to be Josh Donaldson. He barely plays. So, and the second baseman, Devin Travis, maybe half a season of any production. So his lineup is junk mm-hmm. almost the entire season. And he's kept this thing together with a lineup of junk. And there are people in baseball right now who've told me that they think this is his finest year. He's going to get fired. Or are they going to announce?
No, they're going
to
mutually.
They're going to announce that they mutually have decided to part ways.
Well, let's just hope that they win a couple of games here at home for him. Steve, this has been fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
The boys are back tomorrow, 4 o'clock, in their honor. They'll
chat then.
They'll chat then.